though. So the teaching, and granted, the entire teaching is not necessarily, well, I guess it does all tie into mantles being given by grace, but I just chose that because the reality is that's why we're given mantles. They are given in grace for the point of partnering with the Father to move forward into the next new thing. And so what brought me to it is I was listening to the power teaching that Pastor Ron was doing, and it was from John 1:12, where he was talking about, you know, where it says, to those who received him, he gave the right to become sons. And the word for become was exousia, and it has to, or wait, right? Power to become. And the word power is exousia, but that's that authority that's given from the throne. That's where it stems from. And so that just reminded me of Elisha, when he had to wrap his mantle around his head. You know, like that was my next thought. I'm like, you know what? I know we've had teachings on mantles, but that was just where the Lord led me. So I'm like, we're just going to start looking it up, and what he brings from it is what we have here. So, so by definition, per line upon line, we know that a mantle was a piece of clothing that was typically worn about the shoulders, and it identified a person's authority in the spirit realm, and that the sha'al identity is necessary for the true manifestation of that mantle anointing. And we know the sha'al is the ability to ask on behalf of what the Father really wants, coming from that point of intimate commune that we've been in with him. And the rending of this type of garment can be done in connection with a personal act of prophetic contrition before God, as well as signify the removing of kingdom authority from a person. So that's what was in line upon line. But with that in mind, I just started off with looking at the different types of mantles. And in Exodus, we start with the priestly mantles. In Exodus 28, 4 through 5, it says, and these are the garments which they shall make, a breastplate and an ephod and a robe, and the word robe is mantle, and a broidered coat, a mitre and a girdle, and they shall make holy garments for Aaron thy brother and his sons, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. And they shall take gold and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen. So that's what the robe was made of. And, you know, when you stop and think, one, the priest going in to minister in the tabernacle and in the Holy of Holies, it wasn't like they wore these fine garments all the time. It was they had to put it on anew each time in preparation for going in before the Lord. And with that being said, just where it gives a description of what the robe was, it reminded me when it says fine linen, it made me think about the linen of the saints. I mean, we know that we are the prophets, priests, and kings. And so you've got that fine linen, and then it had gold in it, which is the purity that we operate in when we take on the responsibility as sons to move forward in a truth that is being continually refined by the fire of the Father. And then when we release that truth, we know that that is what in turn purifies the people that it's delivered to. And that was the same principle with the priests, right? They would go in, they would receive a word at the Holy of Holies, and then they took that back out and related to the people as a point of direction. I mean, that was, you know, when they were in the desert, Moses may not have had the priestly garments, but he was going up before the face of the Father and spending time, and then he would come out and direct the people. Exodus 28, 31 through 35 also talks about the priestly garments. And it says, and thou shalt make a robe of the ephod olive blue. So here again, you have your saintly calling. And there shall be a hole in the top of it. In the midst thereof, it shall have a binding of woven work around the round about the whole of it, as it were, the whole of a habergeon. I didn't even know how to, I don't know how to say that, but that it be not rent. And beneath, upon the hem of it, thou shalt make pomegranates of blue and of purple and of scarlet round about the hem thereof, and bells of gold between them round about.
a golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate upon the hem of the robe. And so that word for robe is our mantle, round about. And it shall be upon Aaron to minister, and his sound shall be heard when he goeth in into the holy place before the Lord, and when he cometh out, that he die not. So the priest's mantle represented the privilege that was granted to draw near to the Father's throne of authority. And that was represented by their ability to go into the Holy of Holies before the presence of God and receive his directive. And I know I already mentioned it, but this was the same mantle of authority that we operate in as sons. And it's why we're equated with this prophet, priest, and king. You know, they were, and we are, Sha'al individuals who ask from a place of intimacy with the ways of God in accordance with his desires. They received insight and revelation that would cause the people to move forward in new, unimagined ways into unknown territory, being assured of his provision that would bring the victory. And, you know, when I was thinking about it, or, you know, the Lord was reminding me, this was really the true blessing or the commission that was handed down by Abraham as the father of faith to Israel, to be able to move in this manner where they were taking on mantles of authority and moving in the power of God's plan and purpose. And so, you know, just kind of circling back to the fact that, you know, when you're given that priestly mantle, it's like the Father, again, in grace, like as you guys are going forth, you know, there's mantles of authority that he is placing on you to function and operate in within South America, within certain territories, that once you've done that work, not that you won't still be having, there won't still be a priestly mantle that you function in, but it's almost like that one is done. And so, and I'll get into it later too, the whole idea of, you know, a connection between the shaving of the head and the renting of the mantle, but just that, that representing a point of authority that when it's brought to completion, you know, you lay it down, or a point of covenant that you lay it down and you sacrifice before the Father, and you're ready for the next mantle. You know, even though they didn't call it a mantle of grace in regards to the priest, I mean, really that's what it was. Every time they went before the Holy of Holies, they were had to have prepared themselves afresh to go in and receive a new directive. The Father didn't give the same directive every time. And when we go before his throne, we know that he's always giving a new, fresh directive for the new thing that we have agreed to partner with him for. So it ties into grace. So there we go. And the next mantle was the mantle of judgment. And we find this in Job 29, verses 14. And it says, I put on righteousness, and it clothes me. My judgment, so this is the mishpat, was a robe. And this word robe is mantle, and a diadem. And so, again, I use line upon line definitions to make it succinct. But when we're talking about the mishpat, you know, this then would be a mantle that gives one the ability to judge a scenario and apply the principles of God's law to restore something to function as God originally intended. And it represents the visitation of the will of God. So God grants the spirit of judgment to his warrior sons, and the meek are delivered by this judgment of God. And we know that the tabernacle will move forward because of the judgment. So really, judgment is the prophetic manner in which the kingdom functions. And that is when you are given that mantle of judgment, you know, that's one of the mantles then grace that he will give us, that as we're moving forward, we're able to judge the scenario. We're able to see where that application of light needs to be made in darkness so that things can be established in the way that he originally intended, which is really why we go out as sons, because that's what we're doing, right? We're establishing people in the identity that God originally intended. We're helping them to then be able to go forth and claim their terios so that they function as they were originally intended. So there's our next mantle that's given in grace. And then the next one was zeal. And in Isaiah 59:16-17, and everybody will recognize this one. It says, and he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor.
Therefore, his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness, it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and a helmet of salvation upon his head. And he put on garments of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. And the word cloak there is mantle. And so it is a mantle of zeal or jealousy, because that's what the word zeal means. And this would then represent a mantle. Well, let me put it this way. So jealousy in regards to zeal, it really talks about in the heart of God, it's ascribed to the passionate pursuit of his ways and the reclamation of what has literally been stolen or misused. So one who's functioning in this mantle is going to pursue the purpose of righteousness, which is based upon the eternal will of the Father and his insistence on the implementation of the perfect. And again, when we possess this mantle, it enables us to move in accordance with divine jealousy as the messenger and partner of the eternal will and power of God. And it, again, that requires grace, because for every new thing that you go into, obviously, for every situation, it's going to be different. Sorry, I take those off. Like, I start looking through them and I'm like, whoop. As far as really wanting for a people, wanting for an area that it would know and function and what the Father envisioned it to be from the beginning of time. And it's, again, that's really what our prayers and our intercession have been about. It's, Father, we only want to do really what we see you doing. You know, even as Jesus was functioning, it's, we need to know your heart. We need to know what you're doing amongst these sons in Brazil so that we are only releasing what it is that you have intended for them to move in, and nothing that we built upon that we think is a good idea or comes from our own. And another important aspect of the zeal, and this was also, again, you know, mentioned in the definitions, is that humility and obedience are essential to be able to partner with the jealousy of God. Because what Elohim has envisioned is pure, it's perfect, and from a place of its conception, he is eternally certain of the execution of it. You know, so from the very moment he thought of it when he was creating the world, he knew that it was going to be done. But because of that, it has to be in a very exacting manner. And it's interesting because it also relates to the substance or fruitfulness, you know, a possession and the wherewithal that is provided by that. So it means to extend from a point of strength and to represent kingdom authority. And we really have to align ourselves with the exacting measure of obedience to his eternal plan, as the power and supply can only come from the power of God himself. And, you know, we know, and, you know, it mentions too that that same idea is reflected in the word stylos, you know, the idea that we are drawing from the throne what the Father wants to release on heaven. That's, you know, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That was the example that Jesus gave us. And in Ezekiel, 17:8-9, it actually speaks to this. And it says, it was planted in a good soil by great waters, that it might bring forth branches, and that it might bear fruit, that it might be a goodly vine. The word goodly is the word mantle. Say thou, thus saith the Lord, shall it prosper? Shall he not pull up the roots thereof and cut off the fruit thereof, that it wither? It shall wither in all the leaves of her spring, even without great power or many people to pluck it up by the roots thereof. You know, but the point being that when you are directly plugged into the source of the Father before the throne, you're going to be bearing this fruit, but it comes from that zeal or the mantle of his jealousy that you're wearing is what allows you to then bring forth this extended point of strength that you're representing his kingdom in. All right. And then the last mantle is the mantle of righteousness. And this is in Isaiah 61:10. And it says, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation.
He hath covered me with a robe of righteousness. And the word robe there is mantle. As a bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with jewels. So, you know, we well know the definition of righteousness, but it is the accepted norm of what is expected by God. It is a depiction of proper behavior and rule of order or justice and a functioning facet of obedience. So, as we know, it has to do with having God's vision and going forth in that power is righteousness. And in this, we will be able to see where his righteousness, again, has been abandoned or distorted, and to bring realignment, to bring those points of truth and understanding that will bring realignment. But again, these are all mantles the Father gives. So these are points of authority that he gives us to move forward in. And regardless of the arena, you know, meaning which nation or which country or which state within our own nation that we're going to, it's always, you know, obviously there's multiple mantles that he gives us, I think, and points of grace, because each of these elements, you know, as we read through, are really necessary in order to move forward in a new thing, in order to have the fullness of what he wants released from his throne known. Before I go on, does anyone have any thoughts? Oh, Miss Gail does. I've got it right here.
Okay. I just find it fascinating, Sunday after Sunday, to sit here and connect the dots, because you're speaking of being clothed in righteousness, being clothed in humility, the supply that God gives us. All of this are garments, mantles that you put on. And that so echoes what Pastor Larry's sermon on preparation was. It just, I love it when the light bulb comes on.
I do too. You can, but, well, and, you know, again, and we'll talk, I'm getting ready to go into, you know, how can this point of authority be rent or taken? But it's one of those that as long as you're functioning in a certain manner, you know that that authority is on you. You know that you're moving forward in it. And so anytime there's that doubt that the enemy would try and introduce that says, you know what? You're not a teacher seer. That's not your strong gifting. So I don't think you're really discerning correctly what's going on in this situation. Or you prophesy sometimes, but you don't do it as often as other people. So you know what? When they ask people to prophesy, just stand back, because you won't get a whole lot, or what you're seeing, you know, it just seems so insignificant. And it's kind of like, again, going back to Elijah having to wrap his mantle around your head. When the Father has given you these points of authority, this is what you remind yourself that you're moving in. You know, it's not by your own strength, but because he's sending you out, anything that he is showing you, anything that he is giving you, it's carrying the authority of heaven. It's carrying the authority of his original intent. So there's not a small prophetic word. There's not a small point of discernment when it comes to what's happening in the spirit realm, because your obedience to make a declaration based on what he's showing you, or to speak a word of encouragement to somebody based on what he has shown you, we know is what he's using to bring that right alignment, because that's part of the mantle that you're wearing, that mantle of judgment. You know, that's what's causing things to come back into their proper alignment. So, all right. And so as we keep looking, we're going to look at what can cause one's position of spiritual authority to be removed from them. And I think it's something that, you know, the principles of what's in just this next verse, that we have to be mindful of, but we also want to help new sons understand these principles, so that they're just on guard and that they are staying properly aligned. Because the things that, again, come against you to try and cause you to not function so that your mantle is taken, we know that the closer we get to the heart of the Father, those sorts of things are going to amp up. And this is in Isaiah chapter 3, verses 16 through 25. And it says, "Moreover, Yahweh saith to the plans and purpose of God, because the daughters of Zion are haughty," which is proud, "and they walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes." So I'm just, as we go through, I'm going to kind of pause because each of the different things. So when it talks about the people, you know, being haughty, they were proud in their own accomplishments, and they were pursuing this accomplishment to the point that it actually made them feel weak for anything else. It's kind of like you have a really intense passion, and because all your energy is going there, then it weakens you to be able to direct that passion anywhere else. And because of that, they were overthrown, and they had perverted their God-given identity and authority. And, you know, that's when it's talking about to walk. It's the word yalak, which does mean prosper, but it also means to pursue or cause to run or to be weak. So that's how I put that together, because how can you be prosperous but also be weak? But if you're really pursuing with an ardent passion one thing, then you don't have a lot of strength left to pursue something different. And unfortunately, what they were pursuing was not the agape of God. All right. And then down to I guess it's still part of verse 16, but when it starts with, "and wanton eyes," "and wanton eyes walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet." Right? So I'm going to tell you how you mince. But I'm going to start with the eyes because we're going to work our way through. So essentially when it talks about wanton, the word for wanton means to ogle something, or it says blink coquettishly. So I took that like you're flirting with something. But essentially they were flirting with their sole reliance upon their current knowledge of how they were to operate, because, and had failed to look expectantly forward and pursue in faith what they did not yet know. And their ability to discern between Tob and Ra had been clouded. And that's the word for eyes is ayin. So, you know, we're all well acquainted with that as being, you know, the fountain. But we know that that, as sons, really relates to somebody who has accepted the responsibility of a son in partnership with a father, and has the ability to discern between two possibilities, you know, separating again the Tob from the Ra. And also seeing where God has brought us from, but then expectantly pursuing, you know, the uncertain path, meaning in faith. And so that's what they were not doing. And when it talks about mincing, it actually has to do with a trip with short steps. Again, they use the word coquettishly. So because you need me to act it out, like you just think that's my, you know. But essentially, they were walking, you know, because you think about, as you're going forward in faith, you're taking that next step out, not knowing exactly where it's going to land, but knowing that you're going the direction the Father's led you. And maybe it's just in my mind's eye, but I just see that as like, oh, okay, Lord, here we go. Because if you're doing a baby step, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to feel it out. You know, I'm not going to take that big step. And because of that, because they were taking these little steps, it was tripping them up, and they were not wanting to move forward in the unknown. They were preferring the reassurance of the sound made by the fetters of what they had bound themselves to. Because when it talks about making a tinkling, that means to tie with fetters. And that was what they had tied around their feet. So like a fetter, I think of like a, they put you in fetters. What is the word? Shackles. Thank you. Like, you know, the things that go around your wrist, your ankles. And then in verse 17, it says, "Therefore Adonai," so we know this is the facet of God that just deals with his placement and assignment, "will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and Yahweh will discover their secret parts." And this has to do with, so when it says he'll smite with a scab, scab actually means to scrape out or to cleave. And the crown of the head,
is associated with the part most often bowed, but it also roots to a word that means to shrivel or contract or bend the body in deference. So the placement and assignment of God and their lack of willingness to move forward with him meant that he had to cleave the part they had bowed in submission to the world and their assurances they had in their own lifestyles, because this was the Father who was doing this to them. Ultimately, his plans and purpose would empty out and demolish that which they had filled themselves with and was not aligned. It was not in alignment with his new creative way. Because when it talks about and his plans and purpose will discover, the word for discover actually talks about to be empty or poured out, to demolish. And the secret part, it talks about to open or a hinge, but it also talks about, again, the female pudunda, so the creative parts of the woman. And with that being said, again, that it's like their creativity, they were not partnering with God. So God was going to, his place that, he had placed them and he had assigned them to go forward and make the wilderness fruitful. But because they weren't doing that, then his plans and purpose were like, okay, well, I'm going to discover what's at the root of your creative capacity that you're moving in. And when it's not aligning with my ways, then that's going to have to be totally cleaned out so that, ideally, they were still the ones in that time frame that he had chosen to partner with his son. So he was always trying to bring that realignment. And then in verse 18, it says, in that day, and here's Adonai again. Oh, did you have?
I was just thinking about so these daughters of Zion, they had basically shackled themselves to where they couldn't function as God needed them to move.
Right.
And their movements were so minute that they weren't able to even take dominion where he needed them to go. And so that's kind of what, as you're reading this, you're like, this is where we don't want to put ourselves in a place where we're so bound by pursuing things, beyond what God's asked us to do.
Right.
That we are no longer effective in the kingdom.
Right. That's exactly it. Thank you for making that tie-in, because yes.
Yeah. I was seeing this as them moving as prisoners rather than as warriors.
Right.
As a warrior, your steps are going to be very, you run towards the skirmish. With prisoners, you kind of back away, I had the vision of how they take a violent prisoner into a courtroom,
right.
He's all shackled. With the chains on his legs and on his hands, and the hands connected to the chains on the feet. And so he's more of like a little shuffle. He can't take big steps. There's no way he could run. There's no way he could escape. And he's bound to just tiny steps. It's not that he can't take big steps he doesn't want to. It's that he can't.
Right. And the interesting thing here is these were seen as adornments for these individuals. So it was like they had willingly shackled themselves to not be able to take dominion. Right. And they actually took pride in the fact, yes, of the things they had on them that kept them really right where they were and not able to move forward.
Well, and so if you've become so small that you can't be used, then you understand the next verse where it's like, God's got to cleave that. He's got to cut that out, demolish those shackles. Otherwise you won't be able to move.
Right. And I think when I finished going through the scripture, make that connection to even back to Adam and Eve, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was seeing how this matches up with Jesus when he taught, he who finds his life is going to lose it. And he who loses his life is going to find life. In other words, if you find what you like, it's going to shackle you. You're going to lose what you think you're going to get. And if you give that to the Lord, you're going to get more than you expected.
Right. And I think too, you know, just even thinking more immediately, like with ministry going into other nations, and we know because it were, you know, things that were experienced by us and by the Father's Church and other churches, you know, in the U.S., that when you start to partner with the Father as a son, when you take on that mantle of authority and say, yes, I'm going to move forward, that there's always going to be things that are like, you know, and I think Pastor Ron mentioned it. It's like, you know, you go in and they want it initially, but because they're excited about something, but then there's never the true application to move forward in it. It's just, okay, well, this excited us. We were on board because we want to experience what is going on. This is, you know, there's Americans coming and they've got this message and we want to hear it. But then because the message requires really sacrifice, it requires everything. It requires your life, a different way of looking at life, a different way of thinking, and that you're not shackled by, okay, well, we have to make sure that this many people come to the service, so we bring in this much money because we've got to be able to pay to have this building, you know, that it all becomes focused around that versus really this point of partnership and going, you know what, Lord, even if we lose all of that, we know that the greatest treasure we've gained is being in alignment with your heart and really functioning as a son. And that is far greater than having a building to meet in, even if we have to meet at outside or at somebody's house or, you know, wherever it may be. But sometimes that can become the impetus for spiritual leaders, or that, well, you know, we're building bigger barns, you know, we've got to get more people in, so there's the financial provision so that we can go and, you know, quote, do more, even if your doing isn't really causing dominion to be taken.
And I think that's, you know, we've, as a faith, it's kind of been worked backwards. You know, you build it and they will come. And the reality is God's saying, no, I need you to commune with me first, and then we'll go out.
Right. And go in obedience, and then I'll provide.
And then I'll provide if, you know, whatever, yeah, whatever.
Seek first.
Whatever you need, I will provide. And rather than, you know, oh, well, we've got this facility, you know, we should have people coming in. And it's just a backward, we've just been conditioned to think backwards. And so it really is, when we go in and share this concept with people, it really is an unlearning and letting go of what everyone's gathered to this point and said, oh, I'm holding trinkets that aren't going to do anything. I'm holding on to something that is really straw. I need to let the ash go so that I can really grasp on to the deeper things of God, the things that have, you know, eternal value.
Right.
And it is, it's a mind bending of sorts, because you do have to lay aside everything that you've brought to the, into that, the specific point that right. God's asked you to come to. So, yeah, it's definitely a, you want people to grab onto it and take it, but you do realize it's an individual choice to release the old so that you can grab onto the new.
Exactly.
It also looks like that they're looking from without. They're looking outside. They're not looking from within. They're looking at what the world is presenting. They're looking at the physical and that's what God will respond with. He will respond and give them the judgment in that venue that they're seeking. God gives them over to their own depravity, but it doesn't mean that God won't still move in them. He's right. still going to show himself through that. So they're picking the harder path.
Right.
And as saints, when we clarify that to them, we have to know that we're touching those kind of sensitive things with them, and it's going to feel painful, but we got to let them know. It's just because you're standing in the shade, you're not, you know, standing right. in the sunshine there.
Right. No, it's true. But that's even why then going back, you know, to the different mantles, like the mantle of zeal and judgment, you know, that we're functioning in that so that we're discerning. And that's what we're speaking forth, you know, not just because it is going to touch sensitive parts, and it's going to touch parts that they may recoil or withdraw, you know, initially, but that we are still faithful to release exactly what God gives us and know that he's going to complete the work. I mean, and then in that in that, they do still have a choice, but absolutely. So, all right. And so on to verse 18, and it says, in that day, Adonai will take away the bravery, so the glory, the honor, and the majesty of their tinkling ornaments, which are their fetters about their feet, and their cauls, which is an inner weave or a netting for their hair, and their round tires like the moon, which this was really just like a pendant for the neck. The chains, which were noted as pendants for the ears, especially pearls, and the bracelets, which had to do with, you know, something like a band that was twisted, a wristband, or something that was pressing, and the mufflers. You know, you read some of these things, and I'm like, I don't think I realized the word muffler was in scripture, but it's not like what you put on a car to keep your exhaust quiet. In this case, it was a long veil that also relates to reeling from intoxication or to be trembling. And then it talks about separately the bonnets as a fancy headdress and the ornaments of the legs. And that had to do with actually a marching. It also talked about an ornamental ankle chain. And it rooted to the word that means like a regular step or a pace. And the headbands, which have to do with something that is tied around you that physically or mentally confines you. And in that, it's joining you or knitting you together in league or in love with something else. And it says, and the tablets and the earrings. And tablets has to do with the breathing, but it also used the word dungeon. And earrings were a whisper, which was like a private prayer or an incantation. And it says the rings and the nose jewels. So essentially, these were all things that represented outward beauty gained as a result of that which they had pledged themselves to, and symbolized their status in society and their ability to afford such finery, but also their willingness to stay in lockstep with those things that had earned them these adornments. They allowed these adornments to whisper in their ears the identity represented by these jewels that kept them knit together, physically and mentally confined by love for their ability to breathe after and obtain the things that were in direct opposition to God's plan and purpose for them. And, you know, the very thing that he had strategically placed them in the midst of in order to overcome had then overcome them. And in this, they were no longer laying hold of the possibility of what the Father wanted to accomplish in partnership with them. And this is why it was necessary that their mantles that represented their authority in the Spirit were taken away. And, you know, this reminded me of, you know, in Adam and Eve, when the Father blocked the ability to access the garden because the tree of life was there. And he didn't want them eating from that tree after they'd already eaten from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because he couldn't allow them to continual access to eternal life when they were no longer functioning in partnership with his ways. You know, he did not want twisted purpose given eternal capacities, which essentially is what would have happened. And then on verse 22, and this is where a word mantle comes in. It says the changeable suits of apparel and the mantles, and here's our word, and the wimples, which is a wide cloak or veil, and the crisping pins, which actually means a pocket, the glasses and the fine linen and the hoods and the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of a sweet smell, there shall be stink. And instead of a girdle, a rent. And the word girdle has to do with a belt, but that holds an apron of armor. And rent is more like a rope, something that encloses, but it also talks about being cut down or destroyed. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. And instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, and burning instead of beauty. The men shall fall by the sword, and they mighty in the war, and her gates shall lament and mourn, and she being desolate shall sit upon the ground. So essentially, if we fail to function in ongoing partnership, knowing in faith that the Father will lead us into new unknown paths that he wants to make us victorious in, he's going to remove our point of spiritual authority so that we don't continue to build on a twisted foundation. We don't merely dwell in the wilderness, bereft of our God-given authority to see it. But essentially, if we are just dwelling in the wilderness and we don't have his authority, there will not be a fruitfulness. And we want to be the ones who go into the wilderness and make it fruitful. But this can only happen by the authority of the Father and power that's given from the throne. And, you know, it's interesting too, because some of these other words that it's talking about, you know, the instead of the well-set hair that which has to do with the transaction or operation, that they will have baldness. So, you know, losing that capacity to operate in the spirit. And instead of having, when they call it a stomacher, that's actually a mantle, but it talks about for a holiday. So I took it as, you know, authority that you set apart in a time of celebration. You know, you're wearing it because it's representing the authority that you've moved in and how you've taken victory. But instead of that, there's going to be sackcloth, which we know is contrition. And burning has to do with branding that makes a scar, then it roots to blister, instead of to be beauty, which is being bright or beautiful. And when I think of bright, I just think of, one, when it talks about Jesus shown, you know, as the brightness of the sun, but just operating the fullness of his ways. When all seven colors come together, it makes that white light that is bright. And so instead of being that light of truth, you know, you've taken up these other twisted manners of operation that then, again, if we've already stated, keep you from moving forward in dominion. And we see in 1 Samuel that this was also Saul's plight. And it said in 1 Samuel 15, 27 through 28, and as Samuel turned to go away, he laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle. And this is Saul laying on the hold of Samuel's mantle, and it rent. And Samuel said unto him, and this is that prophetic act, right? The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. You know, Saul had also been moving in regards to his own accord, and he was out of alignment with the mantle of his son, because this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't this whole incident happen shortly after he'd offered his own sacrifice instead of waiting for Samuel to come and do it so that they could be victorious? And again, it comes back to the father, you know, even though Samuel was the prophet, he was also functioning, you know, as the priest, that he was going in and gaining the father's intent that then would lead the people forward so there would be victory. And Saul tried to circumvent this. And so, you know, just as the father removes those who sit in opposition to his ways, he also gives us the same authority from the throne to remove that which doesn't align with his ways. And an example of this is in Judges. And this these couple scriptures here, they are, here it is. When in the time of the judges is when Deborah was speaking, you know, to the people about the victory that was going to be gained. And but she told them this victory is going to come through the hands of a woman. So you'll know it was by the power of God, because obviously back then the victory came through the mighty armies, not through the women usually. And so starting in verse 16 in chapter 4. It says, but Barak pursued after the chariots, and Barak is the Israelite, and after the host unto Harosheth of the Gentiles, and all the host of Sisera fell upon the edge of the sword, and there was not a man left. Howbeit, Sisera fled away on his feet to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. And Jael went out to meet Sisera and said unto him, turn in, my lord, turn in to me, fear not. And when he had turned in unto her, into the tent, she covered him with a mantle. And so that word is our word mantle. And then in verse 19, it says, and he said unto her, give me, I pray thee, a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. And she opened a bottle of milk and gave him drink and covered him. Again, he said unto her, stand in the door of the tent, and it shall be, when any man doth come and inquire, which is interesting because that's the word shall, of thee, and say, is there any man here? Thou shalt say, no. Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent and took a hammer with her hand and went softly unto him and smote the nail into his temples and fastened it to the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary, so he died. Right? right? A nail to the temple, that's one way to take you out. But, you know, Sisera, he was known for being relentless and really oppressing the Israelites and not showing, as we would say, mercy. But with that being said, Sisera mistakenly thought that he would find rest and be sustained by that mantle or the authority of the Kenite, as his house was on friendly terms with Jabin, which was the king whom Sisera served, the same king who was oppressing Israel. God had already told Deborah he would deliver Sisera and his men into Barak's hand, but that ultimately it would be through the hand of a woman victory would come, that they would know the victory was the Lord's and not of their own hand. And so Jael's action, she moved in the authority God had given to Israel to remove those far from them who would attempt to keep them from moving as sons in partnership with the Father. Because when you look at the word turn in, it's actually the word sewer. And her call for Sisera to turn in represented, because that really means... to find it. Oh, so turn in sewer is an aggressive and calculated stance aimed at defeating and removing a thing. And she says it twice, you know, to turn in. And so her call for him to turn in represented an aggressive and calculated stance aimed at defeating and removing the one who stood in opposition to God's people. The Father gives us the same authority to remove those things that are in direct opposition to the purpose, to his purpose, and to remove them far from the camp. And that's part of, you know, the authority that we walk in, you know, the different mantles that enable us to be able to discern and to speak the judgment and to move with that zeal. It's all for the sake of being able to remove from, and I'll just say even the people we're ministering to, you know, remove those things that would try and take them out of alignment. So... and then we get to the part that actually I've titled Mantles Given in Grace. And this starts in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. And it says, "But Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat," and coat is the word mantle, "and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice." And I just thought, how appropriate that Hannah, whose very name embodies partnership with the Father and grace, she was the one who was sewing essentially new mantles of grace for Samuel each year as he grew. And not only was she sewing in the physical, but I have no doubt that she spiritually sewed into each garment that represented his mantles of authority. You know, she was a powerful intercessor before the Father, and we... you know, if she was a powerful intercessor before, that didn't stop just because God gave her Samuel, you know, that she continued in that. And so through her intercession, kind of like we do activations, you know, she was prophetically sowing into who he was called to be as one who was going to represent the pure righteous call to partner as a son. His path required grace. His mantle of a son was based in grace. And, you know, the reality is when we're going forth, just like Hannah was giving these mantles, we have the opportunity, because the Father has given it to us, because you saw it with the transfer of the mantle too with Elijah and Elisha, you know, to in grace, as we realize Father is moving people forward, really to give the mantle of authority to say, and that's what we're doing when we say, this is how you walk as a son. This is the authority the Father wants to give you. And these are the mantles that are available to you as you continue to seek him. And as you give out that knowledge, you know, the Father is still the one who ultimately gives the mantle, but you're giving that opportunity. You know, you're prophetically sowing in by grace to their walk and their opportunity to receive these mantles. So, and really, because the mantles also represent a point of authority. You know, if we stop gaining new mantles of grace, which would be our God-given authority, then we fail to move forward in his new mission. Or if we try to base our forward movement on a previous mantle of authority that we have somehow augmented by building upon it with our own good ideas, because that's essentially what Saul did and that's what the people had done, then that's what's going to be rent or taken from us. So, all right. And you see, again, in 1 Samuel, but in chapter 18, verses 3 through 5, with Jonathan and David, there's also a passing down of a mantle. And it says, then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe, so his mantle represented his authority, that was upon him and gave it to David. And his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle, all the things that were going to equip him to fight and to overcome. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of all of Saul's servants. So God grants from the power of his throne authority to move forward in grace. And every new mission finds us submitting previous mantles to take on a new mantle of authority and understanding that's necessary to successfully travel in a new path of grace. And this even aligns with peace, which, you know, when Pastor Ron was talking about the power word, he made the connection too, in the sense that your ability to go out on behalf of the mission, accomplish the mission, and you come back victorious with thanksgiving. And we just have to know that the moment we take credit for the victory and glory and the riches gained, we can become like Saul or any the daughters of Zion that are mentioned in Isaiah. And so then this brings me to our last section here. Let's talk about the sacrifice and the mantle. Oops, sorry. I initially had the hare and the mantle, like the hare and the tortoise. Just kidding. But in Ezra 9, chapter 3, verse 6, it says, and when I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle and plucked off the hair from my head, ouch, and of my beard and sat down astonished. And then were assembled unto me everyone that trembled at the words of God of Israel because of the transgression of those that had been carried away. And I sat astonished until the evening sacrifice. And at the evening sacrifice, I arose from my heaviness, and having rent my garment and my mantle, there's a distinction, I fell upon my knees and spread out my hands unto the Lord my God and said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to thee, my God, for our iniquities are increased over our head and our trespass is grown up unto the heavens. And then in Job, for chapter 1, verses 20 and 22, although obviously very different scenarios still, it says, then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshiped and said, naked I came out of my mother's womb, naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And I mean, these were both men who were walking in their God-given authority, and yet because of things that had happened, well, one, obviously with Ezra, it was because of Israel, you know, part of the nation had been captured and taken away because they were no longer partnering. Obviously with Job, he had just lost everything. This happens right after he finds out that his wife and his children have all been killed. You know, it's just interesting the connection between the hair and the mantle of authority. The hair in the Old Testament represented one's covenant with the Father and their willingness to set themselves apart for any work he had called them to. It also signified one's role or status within society and indicated their adherence to religious laws or their participation in a specific vow. So by shaving or plucking it, one was then submitting their status, their earthly position of authority that in essence was recognized by their community, and any spiritual authority they had previously moved in, so they could move in a new way with the Father. You know, and for Job, it was recognizing that for all the abundance that the Father had given him, he was needing him to move in a new way. And so he was willing to sacrifice that and not speak against what the Father was doing. He sinned not. You know, in Ezra's case, because the people had sinned and were not aligned and a point of atonement, he was bowing who he was before the Father as a point of spiritual authority and representing Israel as sons to be able to have a new mindset so that they could move forward in that next point of grace. And so, you know, with all of that being said, it's, you know, it's the remedy, but it's also the place we want to stay. You know, when we find ourselves, if there's a moment where we realize we have been trying to function in our own power or good ideas, something that's not aligning, to place ourselves before the Father, to submit everything that we've had so that we can move forward and be victorious and be successful on the new path of grace that he has set us on, that's ultimately what we want. So that is all I have. I don't know if anyone else. Oh, Carmen.
God doesn't do shallow. Right. So we need to know and assume that God is working always deeper than we can see or even imagine. And that's for the saints, new sons, everybody, even the people who haven't a clue what's going on. So we know we can't go deep enough. God won't go deep enough. It's more than what we know, but it's is what makes us crave more of him. And we're trusting that's what's being instilled in the people we're touching and dealing with. So I declare that over everyone going and those praying for those going, and in the spiritual realm, they can't help but be touched by this.
Amen.
Amen.